Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, it's Jessa. Welcome back to another episode of the Better Sex Podcast. So glad you are here with me today. I'm excited about today. I have been on Rich's podcast a couple of times, and now it's time for him to be on mine. Rich Heller is a therapist, and he's here to talk about resentment and anger and the kind of sort of heavy negativity that couples can get into that could block them from wanting to have sex, basically. By the time people end up in his office, often they have stopped having sex. And of course, when they come into mind, sometimes that's also the case. And, you know, if you're having relationship issues, if you're triggered by each other, if there's tons of anger, if there's conflict avoidance or high conflict, all of this, of course, can get in the way of your sex life. So he's here to talk about how do people end up that buried in resentment and how do they get out of it? How do you navigate this, bridge this difference with your partner if you're going to stay together and get on the same team again so that then you would want to have sex and, or at least you could work on your sex life. I hope you get a ton out of it. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So, Rich, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Jessa. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah, it's really fun to be able to trade appearances, you know, conversations. So,
yeah, for sure.
So we are talking about resentment and conflict and the burden that this can put on couples. Because, of course, what I see in my practice is if there's too much negativity between a couple, we're not going to really be able to work on their sex life, right? This isn't the way for people. So how do people get there to a place where they're mired in years of negative feelings?
That's a great question. I wish I knew the answer.
Yeah. All right. What are some of the ways people get there?
You know, I think there's actually a very distinct pattern to it. And so at the risk of being redundant, because I've talked about this a lot, is, you know, in the beginning, there's like, we're in love and everything's wonderful and you're my soulmate and everything's perfect or however you frame it. And then at some point, that ends. Not that you don't love each other, not that you don't care for each other, but that thing of being the center of each other's universe, it's like at some point, you go back to work. Yeah. At some point, you realize that the other person burps and farts and has warts and all those things there. He's not necessarily a prince and she's not necessarily a goddess, but they're human beings. And that's where the good stuff happens. That's where, and I guess I'm being a little sarcastic when I say that, that's where all of a sudden you're not married to the man of your dreams. You're married to your mother, who is very critical of you.
Right.
And so what happens is we start all of our ideas. And marriage has a lot to do with it, because when we go through the act of getting married, it brings up all the concepts of marriage that we have, which were all given to us by whom? You know, our parents or the society around us or you know, wherever you picked up your ideas of marriage. And that's how your prince becomes your mother or your princess becomes your father or whatever. You know, all of a sudden, all these ideas get, it's like suddenly you slap on rose colored glasses and all you see is rose. And that, without speaking too much more about it, that builds over time, that can build up. That brings up, you know, all the little unresolved resentments and feelings you have about marriage and couples and parents and all that. But then you, from that, you've got a firm bedrock that you can just build a firm building structure of resentment and hostility on. You know, in all fairness, sometimes people just do bad stuff too.
Well, yeah, right. And we don't want to overlook that. But do you think most of this then is the failure, like our expectations? We think it's supposed to be happily ever after. And some people just don't adjust to, wait, it doesn't quite work like that. Or do you think this is something everybody, what causes some people to really struggle with this? Like, okay, I married my mother. You know, like, I guess what I'm saying, does it help if I realize that's going to happen? I realize, oh, this is a sort of honeymoon period. This is the part where we think we're wonderful and we're, I'm prepared to have some other things revealed.
For sure. Being forewarned that being in love is at best a 2 to 3 year experience, scientifically proven, that's going to end. And having a strategy for dealing with, oh my God, all of a sudden you're someone completely different, you know, is huge. Like knowing that it's coming is huge. What if you know what's coming in front of you, you can create a strategy for managing it for sure.
Okay. So what's your typical response? I mean, you must hear this as a therapist all the time too, right? I love my partner. I just not in love anymore.
Yeah. And I sort of go, duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not always what they mean. And it kind of depends on what the dynamic is behind that. You know, what's driving that statement? Are they fighting a lot? Are they avoiding conflict a lot? And, you know, the problem is that the reason why these rose-colored glasses slap on is we picked this person so that we could learn how to take them off. And so we're not engaged in the process of removing all these filters that have been planted in us for years and years in our upbringing. When we're not engaged in that process, that's when we get stuck. And that's when people start saying things like that.
Okay.
Oh, I love them, but I'm not in love with them. Then we fall back on, you know, I need Prince or Princess Charming back.
Yeah.
But when we're in the game, like when we're going, all right, I get it. Something inside of me can be changed to make this better. All of a sudden, we're less worried about I love, but I'm not in love.
Right. What are some of the strategies people use that aren't so helpful with this whole transition, this awakening, this holy cow, I wake up someday and realize you're not exactly Prince Charming. And then what are the strategies that are actually helpful?
I'm thinking for a second. I'm thinking about sex for a second.
Okay.
There are strategies for the relationship and there are strategies for having a sexual relationship. And then they're not necessarily the same.
Right.
If the kind of anger that you're having is that 0 to 60 response, that's really what we're talking about here, which is really toxic. The chances are that it's something from your past that's being triggered and coming up. So the job then is to write out in a journal, all right, when Tom said this, I was really triggered. Or when Jane said that, I was really triggered. What were the circumstances? What did it remind me of in my childhood? You know, and just keep doing that. And you'll start to see a pattern of, you know, oh my God, this is all about when my dad used to tell me I was stupid, you know, or whatever. And every time Tom says something that makes me feel stupid, you know, I react. I mean, I'm just pulling stuff out of my own childhood here. If I'm going to be really honest, you know, really important process. So you're doing what you can with that. Now let's talk about the sex part. I'm not the sex expert here, but what I tell my clients is when anger is getting in the way of physical intimacy, the trick is to start to first get a check on your own triggers, which is what we just talked about. Second, to start establishing patterns of touch. If you're a guy, guys have a tendency to say, I'm touching you, it's time to do it. You know, guys, you need to get off of that. You need to get back to when you were in love, you held hands, you touched her shoulder, or vice versa all the time. And with little or no expectation, of course, when you were in love, you were probably doing it all the time. But it wasn't, you know, the touch wasn't connected to that. And what happens is when anger gets in the way and sex becomes less regular, all of a sudden it's like, I'm here. Let's do it. You know, so you need to go get back to, even though you're not experiencing in love, you need to get back to disassociating physical intimacy from being sexual necessarily or sexual intimacy, because it can be read as, oh God, she wants it again. I want nothing to do it. And then even if that person wants to be intimate with you, because it's being demanded through touch, they're not going to respond. So it's kind of two things. First, look at your trigger. And Jessa, you can back me up on this. The second part is just to get back in the space of, if you're not so angry that you can, reestablishing affirmative physical contact just because you care. My dogs do it all the time. My dogs never have sex. And yet, when they lie down, they always make sure they're touching each other. Not always. So a good percentage of the time, they're touching each other when they lie on the floor. They're always reaffirming with each other. It's an important part of contact.
Yeah. And you're bringing something up really interesting because I think it happens all the time. People start to associate physical touch with an expectation of sex. Whether the partner is actually expecting sex or not, it's like if they're not touching much, and when they touch, they have sex, it starts to be ingrained in their head that that's what this means, as opposed to having touch throughout our lives, throughout our day. building that sense of connection.
Yeah. And if it feels like a demand or a command, you're much less likely to want to engage in it.
Of course. Yeah. Anything that starts to feel like an obligation, it's going to be deadly to sexual desire for sure.
Even if you want it, right? That's the crazy thing. You may be desperate to have some physical sexual intimacy with your partner, but if it shows up as a demand, you're going to be like, screw this. I'd rather not have it than do it this way.
Right. Now, what do you see about people that, you know, sometimes for people, if they're angry with each other, you know, one partner, it's like sex is the bridge for that. Like they can have sex when they're mad because this is what they find reconnecting, that this is where we drop the weapons or the armor. And, you know, and for other people, they cannot imagine being sexual if there's that kind of tension or conflict.
Yeah, I think it depends on where you are if you're a conflict couple, it's where you are if you're conflict avoidant, it's less likely to happen, by the way. If both people are conflict avoidant, they're going to have less and less intimacy. They're going to lead more and more parallel lives because they're avoiding conflict until one of them does something that explodes the whole thing, you know, like has an affair or changes jobs without talking to the other person or something that just upsets the whole apple cart.
Yeah.
So that's less likely with people who are conflict avoidant. But people who are high conflict, they will have sex. And very often, sex becomes a way to release anger. In fact, high conflict couples, they might both have a bad day at work, come home, you know, pick on each other, like to release the anger and then have some good angry sex afterwards. But over time, that's going to drop out. The more the fighting becomes, I'm going to win and you're going to lose. And even if you surrender a little bit to me, I'm still going to beat the crap out of you emotionally. Then the angry sex is going to stop too. Angry sex, it can be a release. It can be a form of connecting. But over time, if what's behind it isn't dealt with, even that's going to drop out. By the way, that's usually when they come to me. When the couples come to me, they've stopped having sex. They're really pissed off. They're fighting a lot. And even if the other person says, oh, I'm really sorry, the first person says, well, you should be, instead of thank you for saying that, you know?
Right.
So at that point, they're calling someone like me to help them figure out how do we communicate without shredding each other?
Right.
They're not even worried about whether they're going to stay together or have sex again at that point. It's like they're just done shredding each other.
Yeah. And I sort of see a transition too. Like sometimes people can have sex, sort of angry sex or this reconnecting sex, and that's really what it is. And then it can sort of turn over a point where it can become almost hostile. Like, yeah, we're having sex, but I am going to make you feel bad about yourself. Like it can get icky too.
And it may be that I'm not seeing the people who are, you know, there is a distinction between angry sex and reconnecting sex. It may be that there are couples who are reconnecting through sex and their dynamic is shifting and I just don't see them because they go to a couple's therapist, you know, who helps them resolve something on a more chill level. I tend to work with people who are having a more intense dynamic. So I could totally see that.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how you work with people who are coming to you. They've stopped having sex. Like this has gotten really bad. There's a pile of resentment and bitterness. How do you work them towards something that's resolution that involves forgiveness, like that they can move on too and not just be stuck in the past?
The beauty of it is that when a couple comes to me, Jessa, they're ready. They're ready either to not be together or to be together in a way that works. Mm. And so all the time people say, how do you deal with that? It's like, oh, you don't understand. By the time they come to me, they're ready. It really doesn't take much to sort of push them over the edge, you know, and help them to stop. And the way that I work with people, I actually use a mediation model. If a couple were divorcing, I use the same model. And the model builds agreement. There's actually very little therapy. When I work with couples in my 8-week program, there's actually very little therapy involved. Huh. They build small agreements. They air out their differences. They share their positions. Then we get from the positions, we get down to the interests that are driving the positions. And then from the interests, we can start to talk about shared values, you know, ways that these interests can be represented in a way that meets both of their needs. And the problem is when they come to me, they're usually in positions. Like, yeah. This is what I want. This is what I need. You're never going to give it to me because you're a ba, 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 ba. And you know, both people have that position. And it's getting under the position to what's driving the position that really makes the difference.
Because there could be more common ground. If we're talking about what are you actually striving for? What's your interest? What's your value or your goal? Right. You're less attached to a strategy.
The trick is that everyone needs to feel like they're winning without giving up on their interests.
Yeah.
I would literally having this conversation with a couple before I got on this call where they were getting ready to go into it. And I said, let me explain the difference. So, you know, you keep talking about your position, but let's talk about interests. And it was like a light bulb moment for the guy in particular. Huh. He was like, position in what? I had to say it three times, interest. And then he got it. And then he said, oh, I can see all that work. But, you know, he was somebody who's given up his own interests so many times to help people that he was like, I need to go talk to my therapist about this. I said, yes, you absolutely need to go talk to your therapist about this. You need to make sure that your interests are always being represented because your pattern is to give up your interest to make everything good. Yeah. And then afterwards, you get pissed off at everyone.
Well, that's certainly a pattern I see all the time in couples, right? Somebody has been raised in such a way that their wants never matter. They learn to expect not to get them met. Somebody had bigger needs, whatever it is. And they abandon their own interests.
Right. And where does that end up? That ends up in you feeling betrayed. I betrayed myself and it's your fault.
Yeah. Hey, just a quick little break in the show because I have something to offer you. If you have ever sat with your partner and you kind of run out of things to talk about that are not, you know, work, the kids, money, logistics, who's doing what, what's happening this weekend. If you are looking for a deeper way to connect, have conversations that build intimacy, that build awareness, you know, of yourself and your partner, I have daily conversation starters for you. You'll get them via text message every day, and then the two of you can have a more interesting conversation than maybe what you've been doing. All you have to do is text me the word topics to 206-309-8645, or look in the show notes. There's a link there. But text me the word topics, and you will start getting those every day. Now back to the show. So can you give an example? I mean, maybe not the client you just met with, but like some sort of idea of what's the difference between like an example of position versus interest versus values and how that might proceed in a couple.
All right. Well, principles that we live our life by will drive our values are derived out of principles. Let's say I'm going to work way all the way from the back there.
Okay.
So like a principle would be like what goes around comes around. Hmm. You know, or you get back what you give. Same principle, different expressions. And those are the value behind that is I don't have to worry about justice because the universe or God or whatever has a way of meeting out justice. So I don't need to fix everyone. And I don't need to straighten everything out. I just need to do what I think is best. And if I do what I think is best, then I'm going to get back what I think is best. And there's some key values broken in. You know, there's the value of do unto others is a value. I don't need to change other people. I only need to focus on myself. Value. You know, so there's all these values that come out of the principles. Now, when we're talking about a couple, if a couple feels like their values are being crossed, you know, then they'll start to take a position, right? When we feel like we're compromising ourselves, mm-hmm. something that's key to ourselves, we start to take a position to defend it. All right. And so the position is more like, it's more like a strategy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And we're hoping that with that strategy, we can win. We can defend our values. That position with that strategy, we're going to maintain our values. And the problem is that number one, that strategy or position is taken in a vacuum. There's no consideration for the other person's values.
Yes. Right.
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 And number two, because we don't really understand the landscape over there, we don't know if it's going to work.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've dug our trenches and we've got our weapons ready and dang it, this is our position.
And it feels like your values are at stake, right? That's why we dig in
yes,
so hard.
Exactly. Yeah. You've got it. But if you can get down to the values under the position and develop enough empathy for the other person to find out what values are under their position, then you can meet that without even me. You can meet them somewhere where your values coincide, where it's win-win.
Okay. So does any example come to mind?
Yeah. I should probably give you a couple situation, huh?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Please.
Does that be better?
Yeah.
I'm working with a couple where one person felt that they'd been cheated on in some way, not necessarily that it hasn't necessarily been consummated with a sexual act, but they felt that their partner had cheated on them in some way. And now on the other side, what was going on for the partner is in their power dynamic, the partner is feeling very much like his life is clamped down and he doesn't have any freedom. And so somewhere in the middle is the truth, right? And the core values under that are on the one side is, you know, I want you to be faithful, honest, and open with me. And on the other side is I want to feel like I have freedom and like I'm a partner not in service to you. And once they're actually both getting clear on that theirs are their values, now that they have enough empathy and understanding to see what's going on the other side, to understand the pain that the other person might be experiencing, even if the infidelity didn't happen, or even if the control isn't going on, that they might perceive that that's going on. And that when they have that kind of empathy, first of all, they feel pain with them, for them. Once they can get the blame and the finger pointing out of it and just go, oh my God, you know, I can't believe she's feeling that. Or, oh my God, I can't believe he's feeling that. Even though I didn't really do anything, I can see how what I did might've triggered that. And I would never want to trigger that in this person who I love. You know, and then the next part is to lay out those values and see, all right, where's the middle ground? And actually, it turns out that even though the wife is the primary wage earner, that she feels incredibly disempowered in the relationship because he is pursuing his passions in life and she has just left her lifetime job and it feels like she's floundering in terms of self-purpose. She actually wants him to help her. She actually feels he's more empowered, even though he was worried about feeling controlled and all that other stuff. I mean, it's crazy. When you start to look at what's under it all, the feelings that are under it all, everything's upside down.
Yeah. And it speaks to the value, something I talk about with couples all the time, the value of actual curiosity and compassion for each other, like actually caring what the other person's experience is like for them, whether you agree with how they see it or the way they experience it or not, to come at it like it matters, you know?
Yeah, and when we're positioned, typically we're feeling hurt.
Yeah.
Or threatened.
Yeah.
The first step is to notice, wow, I'm really positioned. You know, what can I do to disengage, to bring this down from DEFCON 3 to, you know, to green? You know, what do I need to do?
Yeah.
And if you're assuming you're not in a dynamic like I was describing, where both people are trying to win at the expense of the other, no matter what, that'll usually bring the whole energy down in the room. The other person will see, oh, you're being vulnerable.
Yeah. If I hear takeaways so far, there's watching for your own triggers, like 0 to 60 or whatever, you know, patterns of being really set off and trying to diffuse those ourselves. Mm-hmm. It sounds like watching for where we're positioned and attached to a strategy and oppositional with our partner instead of being really curious and getting down to interests and values underneath.
Yep. But I think even underneath the interest and values, there's, all right, so what am I feeling here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like he's cheating on me, even if he's not, or I feel like she's trying to control me, even though what she really wants is my help. That might be a feeling that's coming up from the past, or it could be just something that's a misjudgment of the current situation.
Yeah. Okay. But what about when something really has happened? It doesn't just seem like you cheated, somebody cheated, or somebody did take a job without checking with their partner, or there was one of these big sort of infractions and, you know, the couple wants to stay together, but like, I guess I'd like you to speak to the value of forgiveness and how somebody can get there.
That's unforgivable, Jessa. You can't do those. So I'm sorry. No, a breach of the marriage contract, put him in jail, put her in jail. Yeah, that's the mindset often. So how do you get to forgiveness from that place of hurt? You know, the hardest for my couples who have that going on, the hardest thing is realizing that they played a part in their own victimization.
Yeah.
Not that they said, come on, do it, so much as that people don't step out of their agreements with you unless they're not having their needs met in some way. That doesn't mean it's your job to fulfill their needs. It means it's your job to be aware that they have needs that are not being fulfilled. And it's also their job to talk about it. But at the core, there's probably some communication missing. You know, it's when needs are not being fulfilled that people do stuff like that. Even if you're a sociopath.
Yeah, I was going to say, there might be some exception for the real shits in the world.
Well, that you still have responsibility for having married a sociopath.
Right. Okay. So
you chose to marry the sociopath or the narcissist or the alcoholic or the addict or the rageaholic or, you know, whatever's going on. You chose to marry that person or you saw the seeds of it in that person and thought, this probably won't happen. And then it did anyway.
Or I'll change them. Right.
Right.
Okay. So that.
There's always some responsibility. Does that mean you don't get to feel like hurt? No. Does that mean you don't get to feel like you've been screwed? No. You get to have those feelings, but you're not going to get very far in fixing it if you stay there.
Yeah. So it sounds like what you're saying is if you're really going to live in the role of victim, as if this was totally done to you, that's going to be a much harder place from which to move forward.
Sure. If we break it down to what happens in the jungle? You know, what happens to wounded animals in the jungle? They get eaten. You know, but human beings, we're not that far. By the way, we're not that far from that emotionally.
Yeah.
You know, so if we hang out in that place of wounded animal for too long, life emotionally, energetically, we're not going to rise out of that pit.
Yeah. All right. So if somebody's willing to sort of look at where they might have some contribution to this, where they've got some responsibility.
Yeah. So this is how I would suggest it. I would say, number one, let yourself be the victim for a while. Like, have a period of mourning, take a weekend. There's nothing wrong with that, right? So bad stuff happens. You're allowed to feel sad. You're allowed to feel, go through the whole thing of how could they do this to me? You should have your friends in there validating it. Don't bathe, you know, do whatever you need to do, really explore it. And then when Sunday, end of the day, Sunday comes, put on your bright, shiny clothes and say, all right, I'm done with that now. Not that I won't ever experience sadness over it, but it's time to move forward. And at that point, even though you've been victimized, you are no longer a victim. Mm. You approach it from a stance of accountability. And the stance of accountability is pretending as if you are God. I am God, and I set this up so that I could learn a lesson. What's the lesson that I need to learn? What are the things that I did that contributed to this? And by taking that position, it's strictly an analytical position. You get to look at what behaviors actually contributed to it and what behaviors in the future will not. So that you can avoid setting yourself up for that in the future. It's not that you're God. It's not that you made it happen. It's not that you did it so that you could learn a lesson, though you will get a lesson out of it if you take that position. Or maybe you did. You know, maybe a part of you is a divine spark and you did do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's something about taking that position. That's like not my field of expertise. That taking that position that helps you take complete responsibility. And from that place, if both people take a position of complete responsibility, all right, I own my choices. I own what I did. I see where I dropped the ball. I see where they dropped the ball. From there can be healing.
Well, for one thing, you take your power back. Right? Victimized, yes. is totally powerless. And maybe that's, yes, why people feel so stuck.
How could she do that to me?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I can't believe she's making me feel this way, as opposed to I feel this way because,
yeah,
I feel angry because this happened, but I don't, you know, it's my feeling and I can move on from here.
Yeah. Part of what I talk to couples about too is making sure whoever cheated or took the job or whatever has some real wrestling to do with their behavior too, right? And
for sure.
And it is important that that person also take 100% responsibility, and that's visible to a partner. We need to see our partners wrestle with remorse and accountability in order to move forward, right? Like, that's part of also where healing would come.
You need to know why they did what they did. If you're in the receiving end of this experience, why they did what they did, you need to know that the why is being addressed, and you need to know what to look out for the future.
Yeah.
So that you can both talk about it as it's coming up before that it happens again. If not, if it's just, I know I'm so bad, I'll never do it again. Oh, okay, baby, I get it. It will come up again.
Right.
But if you understand the why, you'll start to see it and you'll say, oh, Jessa, you're doing that thing again.
Yeah.
And you'll say, oh, what thing? I'll say, you know that thing. Remember that? And you either say, no, I'm not. And you go, Jessa, I'm not comfortable with that. I need to back off. Because last time, you know, we went to see Rich and you know what a jerk he can be, you know, or, you know, you say, oh yeah, that, you know, and you talk about it and you don't have to go there.
Yeah.
The funny thing is that when it comes to infidelity, the studies on infidelity show that it's actually very rarely about the relationship itself.
What do you mean? What is it about? Yeah.
The studies show that when people commit infidelity, it's because they're experiencing a general malaise in their life.
Mm.
And they need something to jolt them out of it. Now, the relationship is part of that because it's just going on the same old way, the same old way, the same old way. My job is the same old thing. There was actually a big jump in infidelity during the pandemic because there was so much of that going on.
Yeah.
But most infidelity is an unconscious effort of the infidel to jolt themselves out of like sort of a semi-depressing reality.
Yeah, we're going to sort of upset the whole apple cart here. We're not just going to, you know, go to a new restaurant.
Well, and some people are compulsive that way.
Yeah.
But not everyone.
Right.
And infidelity occurs in approximately 70% of all marriages. It is estimated.
Yeah. So worthwhile figuring out how to heal and grow and make a better relationship from that point. Right. Use it.
It's really also about noticing, you know, is my relationship in a rut? Are our lives in a rut? Are we living the same old crap over and over and over? You know, do we both feel like is his life, her life lacking purpose? Mm. Right. That's really what it's about. When we get disconnected from our sense of purpose, it becomes, you know, you're part of the machine then.
Yeah.
And so watch out for that. That's the big indicator.
Right. I feel like I have a whole other set of questions I may have to have you ask on too, because I'm thinking all about how to handle conflict well and all these things, but let's save that for another conversation.
Sure.
So where can people find you? Talk a little bit about what you've got available or how people can get in touch.
If you've been listening to this and it sounds like you're having some of these experiences and you want to validate that, you can reach me by scheduling a call with me directly through the following link, bit.ly/, it's really easy, end the fight, all one word, ENDTHEFIGHT.
Okay.
So if you want to end the fight, use that bit.ly link. If you just want to know more about conflict, I've got a podcast, I've got a video blog, I've got a blog post. Go to my website, richinrelationship.com, richinrelationship.com.
We'll put all those links in the show notes so people don't have to be grabbing their pen.
All right, I got
to
write it down.
Yeah, right. Quick, they're driving. Well, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you for having me. And it's always such a pleasure to speak with you.
You too.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get to know you and question and answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.